Every single day I feel it.
Artlist IO.
Every single day I feel the pressure. Double up the work, let's make it extra. Working so my mother get a rest, yeah. Working like I never knew I'm blessed, yeah. Every single day I feel the pressure.
Hey, welcome back to That One Studio on the What Are You Made Of show. It's your boy C-Rock in the building. Got Brendan Rodgers here with us today. We're going to find out what he's made of. He coaches business owners to lead with confidence so that they can maximize the performance of themselves, their team, and their business. And those that know me know that this is right up my alley. I love this stuff. I love building. I love creating. And I also like building people. And it sounds like that's what you do, Brendan.
Spot on, mate. Sounds like we've got a few things in common.
Yeah, welcome to the show, man.
Thank you, mate. It's a pleasure being here.
This guy sounds like one of my favorite actors. He's got an accent. He sounds like he's from down under. What's the guy's name? I can't even think of his name. He was Thor. You know Thor?
Oh, yeah. Isn't it one of those things? You know who you're talking about? I cannot remember his name either.
Yeah.
And people are going to listen and watch the show and like, geez, how can you not remember that?
I love that. I love the Australian accent, man. So did you grow up in near Sydney? Is that where you grew up?
I actually grew up in Brisbane, better known as Bris Vegas, which is north of Sydney, about sort of 1,000 kilometers in Queensland.
Okay. Awesome. So, yeah. It's a different world there, man. You're getting ready to go into the winter time, aren't you?
Mate, we are. The air's starting to get a little bit colder. I said to you off recording that I get to the beach every morning, lucky enough to live very close to it. So the water will start to, the temperature will start to decrease in the next month or two. So it gets a bit tougher getting up in the morning, mate, but we still do our thing every morning.
Yeah, that's awesome. Yeah. It's opposite hemisphere. So, yeah, Brendan, yeah. Look, we start the show the same way every time. And that's with this question behind me written on the wall. What are you made of, bud?
Mate, I watched a number of your episodes just to get into the feel of it and obviously love what you're doing. And the only thing I could come up with, because this is what I say to people, is I'm boringly consistent. That's what I'm made of. And, you know, I get up in the morning and I do my thing. I start the day pretty much the same every day. I built my business the same way. I played football at a semi-professional level the same way. Just turning up each and every day, doing the little things right, doing those one percenters. I'm just trying to grow and develop myself to be sort of a better human, hopefully a better parent, a better sort of husband, a better business owner. And that's what I do in my own business as a consultant, coach. You know, the world's full of us sort of types nowadays, but I just love getting passionate. I just love working with business owners and get a lot of passion in just me supporting them to help them sort of be better people, be better business owners, be better leaders, get more out of their people in their business, which is why I say that in my bio about getting the best out of themselves, their team, and ultimately their business, because really that's what people are in business for, to get great results.
Yeah, I mean, you gotta continue to work to get better, to make more money, and business is about money, but it's also the more you can invest in your business and your people, the better the business does. So the people are really huge. And you know, I noticed one of your Instagram websites is theCultureOfLeadership.com. So culture, that word culture is a big part of business, and leadership is a big part of business. So it's, you know,
spot on,
great,
mate,
to have those two words together.
Yeah, yeah. Well, we linked it deliberately, but actually hot off the press, I just released my new website at the start of this week. So our signature branding now, because I'm moving a lot of my programs into digital content because we've got some plans to travel in a couple of years. So Leader by Design is our key platform. And yeah, the business has not changed. It's just a bit of a rebranding through the digital product side and cultural leadership. I guess the backstory behind that, Mike, is that like any consultant, you know, sometimes we can be very uncreative people. And so when I went into the consultancy world in 2015, I thought, what name can I have? And it was sort of BR Consulting came up, last name Brendan Rodgers. So it was only years back that I thought, Better Results Consulting doesn't sound too bad. But anyway, that was a long time past. Went through that process and eventually sort of I really liked cultural leadership. That was when I was thinking about a podcast. And so I did branding around that. And I said, all right, well, I'll just bring the whole business under that branding. And it's good, you know, no dramas, but we're just sort of realigning that. Leader by Design is our key core sort of service offering in our core brand. And then cultural leadership is one of our podcasts that we run, which is interview style podcast, interviewing leaders from all around the world. So a bit like you, fortunate to really develop a strong network from any corner of the world.
Yeah, that's huge, man. Podcasting's unbelievable. Changed my life. I've seen what it's done for other people. Now, what is the definition of a leader to you? Obviously, there's the dictionary definition of a leader, but like, what do you focus on when you when you're like working with someone and working on yourself, and then you have this final vision of a leader? What pillars, or how would you describe that leader?
I love the word you use, pillars, mate. I like to keep things really, really simple because I think that's the best way to move forward in life. And there's really three things I focus on as far as leader. And I think anybody who's focusing on these things deliberately is a leader. And that is developing character, building competence, and creating connection. And what I've seen, and over the years I've sort of tested these pillars out, and you know, when you look at sort of the character of people and how they show up in the world, how they act, how they respond, how they know themselves, even things about how they develop their listening and how they develop themselves as a person, you know, I put that into the bucket of character and developing character. Competence, I put that into that's the skills. You know, what skills do you need to do and develop as a leader, whether that's mastering your one-on-one meetings, whether it's mastering your team meetings, whether it's understanding how you give and receive feedback well, you know, how you understand change, and you know, some of that other stuff that is very consistent in the leadership world. All that stuff to me fits into the competence side of things. And character, really a lot of that is about the emotional intelligence as well. But in particular, I love to say, well, how do you lead? You know, what are your you know, non-negotiables in leadership? You know, what are your leadership laws? I put accountability into that bucket as well, because that's a really key element of leadership. And that to me is how you get the connection through performance. And then ultimately that leads to how we elevate others. And that's the part that I, you know, I'm always aspiring to. How can we help elevate others to be better than what they thought they could be?
Yeah. And I'll give you another one to add to it too. You can steal this if you want. But the fact of the matter is a leader is also someone who causes and creates futures for people, or helps people cause and create. Two C words, by the way. Causes and create futures for people, right? And that's something I focus on all the time, because, you know, I say this a lot, but like a mentor of mine told me, he's like, my ears perked up when I heard this. One of the most attractive things you can do is cause and create futures for others and yourself. And I was like, wow, man. So add that one in there. You can steal it. It's a powerful one, man.
I love how it's framed. You know, straight away I think about how we're elevating others, and coaching is a fundamental pillar of that. But I love you're a marketing wizard. I love how that's framed.
Yeah, well, thanks. Shout out to Richie. I got to give him credit, but I made it my own. You know, so what's it like growing up in Australia? Because I've never been. I've seen obviously television shows about it. I've talked to some people in the past, but I've never been there. And a lot of the listeners obviously are from the United States. So what's Australia like?
Mate, it's like all the, you know, movies say, it's hectic, mate. One minute you're fighting crocodiles and you got kangaroos in your backyard. You're sort of trying to dodge snakes left, right, and center, mate. It's a dangerous place to be. Seriously, it's not that bad, mate. It depends where you're at, I suppose. But look, you know, as far as my sort of youth, I suppose, you know, I don't know it's any different to any other places. You know, I grew up in Queensland, as I said a bit earlier. So it's a little bit warmer up there than sort of New South Wales, but you know, you get the opportunity to go to the beach because the weather's pretty good. We love our sport in Australia, particularly, you know, things like cricket and football, soccer, rugby league. There's Aussie rules. I know it's more NFL over your way, I suppose, but you know, we grow up active, doing lots of things. You know, I think generally Australians love their family, they love their communities, again, which I find is no different to a lot of other places I've had the privilege of traveling to. But you know, I've got nothing but very, very fond memories of my childhood. And you know, Australia, they say, is a land of opportunity, and you know, it is a great place. There is opportunity for people here. Probably not as much as the US. US is sort of, you know, on steroids as far as the number of people and even the mindset that they have about entrepreneurship. But Australia is that sort of country that's sort of catching up and developing and continue to evolve. And it's a great place to live. I love calling it home. And there's so many beautiful parts of the country that I'm yet to explore. So hopefully to do that over coming years.
Yeah, and have you noticed a shift in that mindset of Australians that you're connected with, of the entrepreneurial shift? People are starting to get more into that, maybe more risk tolerant, less tall poppy syndrome, which is a big thing in Australia I heard about. Have you noticed a shift in that since maybe the pandemic or over the last 10 years?
Yeah, mate, it's hard to say. I think, you know, one of those things that when you're hanging out with sort of the people you hang out with, it's sometimes easy to get into your bubble, right? So I guess the people I'm involved with and communities I'm growing or helping grow, there's that mindset in there. But I really do feel that it's not progressing anywhere near at the speed that you'd love it to. There's still very much that tall poppy syndrome. And for whatever reason, you know, Australians as a general basket of things, you know, like to knock the person who's, you know, they're having a crack at things. They're showing up every day and they're doing good things. They may be seen to have been successful, and you know, people sort of look at that and think, oh, you know, they're getting a bit too big for their britches, so to speak. So there is still very much a bit of that tall poppy syndrome, as far as I'm concerned. But you know, we're changing, we're evolving. Certainly with the pandemic, a lot more people took on sort of what you call side gigs. And you know, some people were very fortunate to say, well, those side gigs became more permanent gigs and more full-time gigs. And you know, they just realized that they didn't need to be doing the big corporate 9-to-5 stuff or whatever crazy times they worked. They could have a lot more flexibility, and they had skills. They found some confidence in themselves, I think, to say, well, you know, when we're pressured, when we're put under pressure, and when we've got to think about what we're going to do with our life, people make some pretty good decisions, and I think they surprise themselves.
Yeah, I agree, man. Pressure makes diamonds. So during the pandemic, we see the news, right? We're watching the news, and I don't believe everything I see on the news. So. But they showed a lot of things in Australia when it came to restrictions and then people trying to go out and then people getting beat and all that. Was that true? Like, was it really harsh with the lockdown?
I think the best way to say it is, mate, it really depended on what state you were in. So I don't know if the same applied in the US, but Victoria was, at least from what you hear in the news and certainly what seemed to eventuate, was they were the highest lockdown place in the world. So the number of lockdowns they had, the amount of days that people were in lockdown. So I certainly wouldn't have liked to have been in Victoria at those times. I think we were, being in New South Wales at the time, we were very, very lucky in that we certainly had some lockdowns, but the government was less trigger happy about shutting people down every second. And, you know, there was a lot more freedoms. And the beauty that we had, I suppose, we were also being on the Central Coast, which, as I said, is about an hour north of Sydney. And we were still classed as a regional area. Now, there's a lot of people on the coast that don't like that classification, but it certainly came in handy during the pandemic, because when you're classified as a regional area, you had a little bit more freedom, even when the lockdowns were on, to move around and stuff like that. So that was, you know, that was a bonus. But, you know, crazy stuff, really, you know, shutting of borders and, you know, things that, I guess I'm only, you know, 48 and, you know, but people that have been around for a lot longer, you know, there's never been those sort of situations of shutting borders. And you know, you had in Queensland, sort of New South Wales, and it was Queensland shutting the border. New South Wales didn't, I don't think they did this specifically, but Victoria shut their borders, Queensland shut their borders, so we're sort of smack bang in between those two areas. So you know, families not being able to visit each other, you know, at Christmas time, and you know, just to me, crazy stuff. But I guess, you know, when you look back in hindsight, it's like the context of the situation. There was a lot of unknowns, and you know, people had to, you know, people in government sort of offices had to make decisions fairly quickly. And you know, some could say that they were trigger happy, I suppose. But you know, look, what would you do in those sort of situations? I'm not sure. But I think in hindsight, it is very easy to say, look, it was a bit overboard. People felt their liberties were taken, and I'm not sure we really need to go to that level. But
yeah.
It is what it is. It happened, but yeah, that's sort of how it eventuated. I guess there was a bit of sort of the whole people dobbing in each other sort of mentality that came in, which was really scary in my books. And there was also a lot of that whole stuff that we talk about in the leadership spaces. You know, it's not about you first and foremost. It's about others and how you support others and how you help them grow. And you know, it's not about sacrificing everything for yourself, because you've got to be a strong person. You've got to be looking after yourself in order to be able to help others. Yeah. But there was a lot of one out that happened during the pandemic. And I don't know if you saw crazy stuff about toilet paper, but for some reason, toilet paper become the new gold, and you know, scarcity, and people grabbing it, and people fighting each other in the, you know, in the hallways of Woolworths and Coles and stuff like that. Now, these weren't everyday events, but they certainly happened more than a few times, and they were, you know, portrayed on the mainstream media and stuff like that. And it's just, it was crazy stuff, mate. Crazy stuff.
We saw that same thing. We saw that same thing. So
not a nice side of Australia and the people, you know, because again, like any country, mate, there's so many great people, and there's an element, a very, very small element of people that maybe aren't so great, and they're pretty terrible people. But it is a small element in any country. But unfortunately, they probably get the most exposure.
We're very similar in that aspect. So what was the first business that you started, Brennan?
The first business I started was the one I'm in now, my leadership and business coaching consultancy, mate. So I grew up in a family of small business. My father was a small business owner, and his mum before that did some small business activity. So, and on my mum's side, they had some small businesses. So it was in the bloodstream, I guess you could say. But I guess you can probably tell from even my answer at the start of the show about being boringly consistent. You know, I get up and do things, and I'm not a massive risk taker. So with a wife and a young family through those years, it was very comfortable. Although I worked hard, I had a lot of opportunity to do different things in the corporate space, but I certainly wasn't prepared to take the risk that, you know, you need to take as an entrepreneur and a small business owner. So it wasn't until 2015, I planned for it for a bit of time, but it wasn't until 2015 that I got my ultimate outcome, which was a redundancy from the business I was in. And that just gave me the lift to do what I was really hoping to do and to grow. And that's what I've been doing ever since.
And so what was the go-to-market strategy? Like, how did you start your business as far as getting people to know about you and getting out of obscurity and getting people to, you know, explore working with you?
Yeah, well, I started about 3 years before the ultimate outcome of 2015 redundancy. So as simple as networking, mate. Like you were telling me before we started recording, you know, meeting great people and networking and connecting with people. And that to me was the single biggest factor that I know I needed to do, because when you get stuck in the corporate space, or stuck when you make a choice to be in the corporate space, it's very easy to just be involved with the people that you need to be involved in through work, and then connect with sort of a client base that aren't, again, it's an employee sort of mindset. So you're not being deliberate about expanding your network outside of those circles that impact your immediate role. So I just turned up to networking events. I found some that I liked, and I found some that I didn't like. I started to develop my own style around how I enjoyed networking events and why I enjoyed networking events. And I just believed in adding value to people and learning from people and trying to understand from other people in those sort of events that were entrepreneurs and what they were doing well and what worked for them and maybe what didn't work for them. And that's how it worked. And what that ultimately ended up with was, you know, over some years, I'd helped out a business leader at the time. And when he found out that I was made redundant through my corporate role and I was going into the consultancy space, he knew I had a set of skills that would benefit his business. And I walked out on the Friday and I started consulting to him on the Monday, and I was able to start to build the business off the back of that.
Gotcha. Okay. And so, you know, what I found with a lot of business owners is that they have an ego, and their ego doesn't allow them to ask for help or admit that they need help or admit that they're weak in certain areas as far as leadership or what have you. And so they have to tend to go down and seem like they have to hit rock bottom or close to it sometimes before they ask for help. Right. And the smart ones put the ego to the side, and they say, you know what? I need some help. I need to figure out how to do this before I have issues. Right. So what do you do when you're meeting a business owner? Like, how do you get into conversation with them? Do you start asking certain questions? You know, because you obviously want them to start asking questions to you, like, well, what can you help me with? Or what do you do? Or if I went deeper with you, or how do I go deeper with you? Like, so what is your, because I know I have my thing when I'm talking to people, I know exactly what to ask. I know exactly how to handle it. In what you do, what is your framework, I guess?
Mate, very simply, when I'm meeting with a business owner, potential client, for example, and even just in networking, I seem to be able to get a read on people just based on two words they use. One's I and one's we when they're talking about their business and their team. And now, again, if they're a a micro business owner and they're not having a team, then, you know, it would be natural. So you need to understand the context of that. But certainly it's, to me, it's very, very simple in the space that I'm playing in, the leadership and business growth space, that if I'm hearing a person just through normal conversation, we're talking about their business and, you know, their teammate came up or things that they've done and, you know, how they've led their team and stuff. If there's a lot of I language coming in, then that would give me some indication that it's probably a bit more about them than others. Now, again, that's not a, it's not the final sort of thing, but then you can sort of unpack that. And like, one of the questions I just like to ask is, what do you love about leading people? And to me, any sort of delay in answering that question is an issue potentially. And it's even more of an issue if it then comes back to them. Oh, you know, I just like to do this, or I just like to do that. To me, again, the ultimate of leadership is how we grow and develop other people and how we help other people succeed. And if that language is not coming through, then it's not a dead duck, so to speak, but it's generally a much harder road. And generally I don't get on well with people that have that sort of mindset.
Gotcha. So you'll a lot of times just say, this isn't the client for me.
Absolutely, mate. And I think to be as authentic as we can be and to be able to deliver the best work and support the clients in the best way, I think you have to be honest with that. And, you know, when you're a new consultant and trying to grow a business, that's not easy to do because you're like, you know, you need the money. You need the revenue coming in. You want to grow this business. But yeah, and it's not, I'm not sitting here on my little high horse and say, I've done this perfectly. No way. I've taken on clients that, you know, I haven't felt great about and it hasn't necessarily worked out well. It's not that we haven't got results, but they haven't been the long-term client and the relationship building client that I love to work with. So, you know, you just have to be courageous and you have to know that if you're not 100% aligned together and invested in that, and you're hearing the language that you want to hear and you're working with people that have the mindset and the values that you want to work with, then it just does not work out as well as what you want it to.
Yeah, I agree. You're not aligned with everybody. I mean,
absolutely,
a lot of people think it's just the money, you know, and then if they're willing to pay me, I'll figure it out. And then you're miserable. Then you resent the relationship. Yeah.
Sorry to interrupt, mate, but I even say that with one of the things I learned over the time of being in my own business is even when you're giving to people and you have that mindset, but if you're, there's a balance of being too giving and if people are, even if you're reducing your rates for whatever reason, to try, like I just feel that that's undervaluing yourself. And believe me, I've done it and this is how I felt when I've done that. And it just, you're not always just showing up, and it's not that you don't want to, but you're not always just showing up as your best self when you're reducing your own value. And again, that's a choice that you make. So you've given up your power to do that. But, you know, I would sort of advise any consultant, as tough as it is, sometimes it's really good business to turn back business, and it's good business not to undervalue yourself. If you can do those two things, and over time, and you're having the right conversations, networking, and meeting the right people, you'll do all right.
Yeah, I agree. I agree with that. Well, if you are consulting on leadership, how do you? Because I'm always thinking about recurring revenue. Okay. Obviously offering value, making sure that I'm delivering and over delivering. But I'm always thinking about stickiness, lifetime value of a client. Well, if you go in and fix them, so to speak, or teach them about how to be the best leaders, and you do so good of a job, then you got to move on. How do you remain with them? How do you remain helping them? Like, what's the setup that you have?
It's a great question, mate. The process, very simple process that I follow. So I do a lot of week to week, a lot of the one-to-one coaching with generally the business owner. I do have one client. I'm generally dealing with smaller businesses. So, you know, the business might be sort of 5, 10, 15, 20, up to 50 people. And I've got a bigger client, one of my clients, which is much bigger than that. I only like to work with a small handful of clients at any one time. So the basic structure I have is that through the one-on-one coaching, off the back of, we generally start with either a kickoff if it's a smaller business with a smaller team, or I start with a leadership team kickoff over a couple of days. And I do the one-on-one coaching with the client, and sometimes working with the senior leaders, depending on the size of the business. But then every quarter we're doing an offsite. So we're resetting the strategy. We're checking in on the team. We may do a few little exercises working on the culture and the dynamics of the team, and fundamentally always coming back to the strategy. So I find that that balance of working on yourself as a leader, because that's just a never-ending process, as we know, and then the strategic direction of the business and really creating an accountability structure under that. And if you get that on a rinse and repeat process, which is every quarter, then it works really, really well. And that's how I have my long-term clients. Now, yep. I'll give you an example of where, you know, I'm very comfortable in taking an engagement to an end. So I had a client that I've worked with for a couple of years, and this is a fairly recent story, but I had a client that I've worked with for a couple of years, fantastic person, great business owner, had his business for about 10 years. And, you know, through a number of different reasons, but mainly some family reasons and some mental health type stuff, he really needed to scale back the business. So yeah, he made the difficult decision to scale back the business. And I knew myself that, well, that meant that there was probably wasn't as much need for me. And he had these sort of thoughts before. And we just unpacked these things. And what he said to me was, Brendan, when I've worked with other coaches and consultants and stuff like that, and I've wanted to do this sort of thing, then yeah, they were just so against it. And straight away I think, well, I don't know the way that the person or those coaches were thinking, but straight away I jumped to, well, it sounds like they were putting their own interests first rather than the business owner. So what growth, development, and ultimately an end of engagement looked like for this person was we scaled the business right back to him, because that was the best form of profitability for him. He's in a market that has extreme profitability opportunities. It scaled back his risk to almost nothing outside of himself. He can control a lot of that, and then he can pull in contractors as he needed. And mate, he is absolutely living his best life. He's got plans to go out on travel around Australia for 3 or 4 months with his family. He's now better in touch with his family. His relationship with his wife is much better. He's taking time. He surfs with his kids each day. He works a few days a week, closing out some projects, and mate, he's just having a great life. And, you know, we carry on a relationship as friends, because that's the relationship I build with my clients. But that was a deliberate working on getting the best outcome for him as a business, which ultimately meant that our engagement, the commercial side of our engagement, ended. But that's the best result for the client. So that's what we've got to work towards.
Yeah. You know, how many people, I love that. Yeah, 100%, man. Because, you know, at the end of the day, if you're not serving the client, that's not value.
Absolutely.
It's not value. It's just a transactional situation, and you're not even, you know, supplying what you did in the transaction. But I had a thought on, what was my thought? I lost my train of thought on that. But when you talk to people for the first time, a lot of times, what percentage of people do you think actually know what they want, what the vision is?
Oh, mate, I'd say that's close to zero. I would personally say
that crazy to you? It's just wild how people don't know what they want, and then they wonder. They get frustrated that they're not making progress to nowhere. Like, how can you make progress or even measure?
Mate, I agree. It seems absolutely ridiculous. I guess the thing that I've come to a realization in over the years is that, there's that old saying, you don't know what you don't know. And I guess the fortunate thing is that having grown up, I guess you could say, in business in a corporate environment, you know, whether you love to hate corporates or not, and you know there's great sides of it and there's terrible sides of it, but ultimately corporate businesses, bigger businesses, are much better at these sort of things. So I had those opportunities to learn that sort of stuff through my 23, 24 years in corporate, you know, the quarterly review process and working to budgets and managing budgets and some of these things that, you know, people grow up in small business, they're bloody good at what they do and they work hard, they've got fantastic work ethic and they've got great mindset around stuff, but they just don't know what they don't know. So some of that stuff that I took for granted for many years of what I've learned and stuff, I've just realized, and that's where my value sits. The experiences I've had, and you know, no different to you, we've all had different experiences and those experiences shape our journey. But we underestimate the value of our own experiences. And therefore, if we're undervaluing or underestimating the value of our experience, until we realize that, we're actually not showing up and we're not able to help our clients in the best way because we make assumptions. We start to assume that they know this or they know that. And you know, that's a bad place to be, because then you're not offering the value and you don't even know there's value you can offer. So it's a tough thing. You know, there's surprises often, because to me it just seems like a basic thing. You know, even through my sporting background, it's always about sort of setting that next goal and, you know, leading to the next game and winning that and putting in a plan to do that. So it's sort of inbred in you, but it's just not common sense for everybody.
Yeah. Yeah. And when you don't do that, when you assume that everybody has your experience or knowledge, then you start teaching at a too steep of a gradient and they get lost.
Absolutely,
you
mate.
You start here when you should start here with them. So yeah. This is good stuff, Brendan. Where can people go deeper with you that are listening that want to learn more? Is it the website leaderbydesign.au? Is that the best
Perfect,
place?
Perfect, mate. That's through that channel. You can find us on all sorts of stuff, but that is the best entry point to say g'day.
And what's the name of your podcast now that you have?
So our interview style podcast, Mike, is Culture of Leadership. Okay, and that's one where you interview leaders from all around the world and more about sharing their experiences. And I end each one of those shows with my three key takeaways that I took from the guest. I've now started my Leader by Design podcast, which is a narrative show. So it's me talking about some of the consulting work I do, some of the stories I have, some of the experiences and sharing bits and pieces of my own knowledge. So we've just released episode 4 and episode 5 will be out in a couple of days. And then I also released a series over Christmas, New Year when, you know, it's all boring stuff and we've got too much time on our hands. We recorded a 10-part series with 10 different leaders from around the world about their worst leadership moments. So I think we've released 2 episodes of that. So over the next 8 weeks, there'll be another 8 episodes coming out. And just a little passion project, mate, I'd love to sort of mention on the show is that myself and my wife are carers. So we're foster carers. And today, off the back of the podcast we're doing today, my wife and I are just recording our first episode of that podcast. And it's a little passion project for
awesome.
Us. And that's called Fostering Together.
Oh, awesome. Congratulations, man. I love that. That's
Thank
phenomenal.
You,
all right, guys, listen, go check out Brendan Rogers. He's in Down Under, down there in Australia. And, you know, he's got the leadershipbydesign.au. You can check him out there. And also the podcast world, search his name. You can find him on his podcast. And listen, Brendan, I appreciate you being here, spending the time and sharing some of the stories, man.
Mate, I appreciate you. It's been a pleasure. Thanks for having me.
You as well. Hang tight while I wrap this up. Guys, keep going to Apple or Spotify. Make sure you follow along with us. We have some great guests coming in to share their journey of what they're made of. And I'd like to, you know, just request that you make sure you subscribe, like, comment, and share with your, you know, your friends, work, you know, work, coworkers, I was trying to say, your coworkers. And, you know, if you have any questions, you can always DM me on Instagram. Check out our content on Instagram at MikeyCrock.com. Until next time, it's your boy C-Rock signing off on the What Are You Made Of show from That One Studio. Beat That One.
Music licensed.